What kind words from Amy. It has been my privilege and pleasure to get to know your pastor, Brent. And I feel really free. He's leaving. He's not going to be monitoring me in any way. That's a lot of trust. And then Matthew and Amy and Tim, over the years, we've appreciated our relationship. My wife and I, Sherry, have had the privilege of just being in their lives through InterVarsity and church. And yeah, it's good to be with you guys today. Again, my name is Mike Harder. Some of you I've recognized from this winter's day retreat. My wife and I had a lovely time with you guys and just appreciated your openness to what the Spirit of God had for you during that weekend. As I said, my wife Sherry and I have been married 48 years. We've been in ministry some form or another for 48 years. We just got baptized into it right away. Both my wife and I came to know Jesus in what was called the Jesus Movement in the 70s. Just headlong life of counterculture hippiedom, and met Jesus and has transformed our lives. We've had the privilege of raising 6 children to adulthood, and we have 8 wonderful grandchildren. One of them, our oldest, is with us today, and he is actually scooping up ice and flavoring it right behind us. And so I found out, David, I just got to say, I was talking to Brent about it, the most unpopular thing to order is a large, because it's just so hard to make. And so you're not the only one that feels that way. Everybody does. But yeah, it's just so good to be with you guys today. I love this series that you're doing this summer, Songs of Summer. How many of you know how a pencil works with those things? Huh? Yeah, I mean, I looked at that thing when it was sent to me, and I go, oh, all I think of is pencils and pulling it out of my machine and ribbons of it. If you drove around in the 70s, both 8-track and cassettes reflected along the highway because people got... Yeah, just... Anyway, it's so good. I love it, though, because songs, and you guys are going through the series of songs and music are so powerful, aren't they? I mean, they elicit emotions, ignite our imaginations. But the thing we were reminded again, it brings us to a remembrance. Hear a song like this one. You know, they were just saying, Lean on Me. Man, I remember that. I remember when that came out, Bill Withers, right? And I remember when that came out in about 72, and where I was at, and the first time I heard it. And yeah, music does that. Songs do that, particularly the Psalms. I remember those sweet songs of the early 70s, those worship songs that when I came to Jesus, you know, and I remember one, though. You guys that grew up in the church and church camp, you probably know. I just bawled every time. I was just a new believer in my mid-20s, and I'd hear, it only takes a spark to get a fire going. And I go, yes, it does. You know, I mean, that's the power. And so it's understandable when we read some of these psalms and sit with them, the power they have over our lives. They bring out those emotions. They ignite our imaginations, and they bring us in remembrance of the goodness of God. The Psalms in particular are primarily a window in primarily David's life. I mean, other people wrote it, but we get a little snippet, a window in King David's life with God. It was said that he was a man after God's own heart. And so in the Psalms, we see his heart, don't we? We see this relationship, this vibrancy, this intimacy of God's love for David and David's love for him. We experience God through David in our real concrete world. I mean, this guy was human, wasn't he? David was very human, much like us. One of my favorite little snippets of it's small. You gotta catch it. But it's when David passes away and God is talking to Solomon, taking over the reins. And God says to Solomon, if you keep all of my commandments as your father David did, I will grant you what you desire. First time I read that, I went, whoop, you know, like that tape backwards. Let's rewind this. Doesn't God know the mess that David lived? The mistakes he made? The failures? The disobedience? I mean, murder's a big deal. Adultery's a big deal. And yet, he said, if you keep all of my commandments as your father David did. David experienced the goodness of God.
Yes.
David experienced the kindness of God, the forgiveness and the grace of God. And what came out were these lovely psalms that poured out of his heart. We're going to look, when Brent asked me, just choose any psalm, I go, I'm going to just go for it. I'm going to pick Psalm 23. Why not? Nobody's ever heard of that before. Why don't we just look at it? But it's interesting, Psalm 23 wasn't really popular or set apart until the early 20th century. It was just a psalm like everybody else, but somebody thought, hey, this is a great idea for funerals, you know, and then let's sew it on pillowcases. And of course the 60s and 70s came on, and we'll put it on bumper stickers, and then we'll put it on plaques in our house, and we'll make little sweet little what are they called, those little porcelain dolls, precious moments, you know, we'll do a whole bunch of those things and stuff like that. But it was so, it is so important, especially for us as believers, to identify Jesus as that great shepherd, that kind shepherd. And so it became very popular, and we know it. But in that popularity, have you ever, and I love that Lectio was mentioned, have you ever read something once and didn't get it all? Yeah. I mean, I have been reading Psalm 20. I knew Psalm 23 even as an unbeliever. You know, I knew that. I knew Psalm 23 and John 3:16 from the sporting events and the guy with the rainbow hair, the frizzy hair that always had a sign up at sporting events. But Psalm 23 really indicates and shows God's heart for humankind and David's heart for God. David was a shepherd. He knew what he was writing about. He wrote of his experiences of the God that was his shepherd. So if you will, let's just read slowly Psalm 23. And I want you to put aside, it's going to be in the message, so it might be a different translation than you're used to. But try to put aside anything that you know of it. And think about possibly hearing it or reading it for the very first time. God, my shepherd, I don't need a thing. You have bedded me down in lush meadows. You find me quiet pools to drink from. True to your word, you let me catch my breath and send me in the right direction. Even when the way goes through Death Valley, I'm not afraid. When you walk at my side, your trusty shepherd's crook makes me feel secure. you serve me a six-course dinner right in front of my enemies. You revive my drooping head. My cup brims with blessing. Your beauty and love chase after me every day of my life. I am back home in the house of God for the rest of my life. I was talking to Tim right before the service, and David wasn't talking about knowledge. He wasn't talking about a theological concept. He was talking about an experience. How he experienced God in his everyday life, through every aspect of his life. I would often read and think that the green pastures and still waters was my destiny. I mean, wouldn't you like that to be your destiny? You know, no matter what you're going through, oh man, I could use some still water and green pasture right now. Yeah, that would be, you know, the Calgon commercial. You know, just take me away, if you remember those older people of us. It is not our destiny. Psalm 23 is the reality of our human life. Our human experience. We will have green pastures, I promise you. We will have still waters. And particularly in the message, it says, even when the way goes through Death Valley, that we'll find ourselves in scary places. We'll find ourselves in uncomfortable places. We will find ourselves in unsure places. And occasionally, we are going to, and this is, I think this is the, I don't know if it's the audacity of God or the humor of God or what he does. He actually does the dinner for us to sit in front of our, he doesn't let us escape our enemies. He puts us face to face with them. To be confronted by them, to be abused by them at times, to be misused by them, to be misaligned and misspoken about by them. So as I have been looking and meditating and allowing this to mull over, I'm realizing that these aren't destinations. But the destination is how is God with me through this life. Yeah. Jesus said, I'm never going to leave you nor forsake you. So how is he with me in the green pastures? How do I experience him in the dark shadows? How do I experience him when I'm confronted and in front of my enemies? How is he with me? How do I know him? How do I relate to him? How do we experience God in those dark places? In those bright places? In those hopeful places? So I believe the destination becomes not so much the green pastures and still waters, or even in the house of the Lord forever. I really believe that the destination is noticing, being aware of how God is with us. That's what seems to have been David's reality. I mean, just take a quick look at the Psalms, and we see that he had some issues from time to time. You know, he had some issues with God from time to time. And yet, there was always, it seemed like a but. or an and in there. I love how David begins this. He sets this table. God, you're all that I need. I have nothing but nothing that I need but you. Psalm 107 says, he satisfies my soul with good things. David experienced how God met those deep desires and longings in his heart. That he and he alone was the source for all that he needed. For the safety, every human being. I mean, you know, these were the three temptations of Jesus becoming human and flesh for us. But this need for safety, this need and desire for security, and this need and desire for significance. We see all of that in Psalm 23. Where he kept us safe in those dark places. He made us secure by his love and his staff. He gave us significance by placing value on us, following us by goodness and mercy. It reveals God's good intention for us. The hope that we're not traveling this world alone. It begs the question for us, how are we experiencing God in everyday life? Not just knowing God, but experiencing him. One of the first hymns, my grandfather was a believer late in life, and I didn't know him very well, but I had occasion to visit him in another state. I grew up in Pennsylvania, and he was in Boston, and his little church, they had, and I imagine maybe Ashworth did this, they had the scoreboard at one point on a, you know, the hymn numbers and then the amount of people. They had that, and then they had a picture of Jesus standing at the door and knock, you know, and I mean, just, it was all nice, you know, and it was a smelly old church. And, but they sang this song. Eliciting emotion. I come to the garden alone. And he walks with me and he talks with me. And he tells me I'm his own. That's not theological assumptions. That's reality.
Yes, yes,
God
yes.
desires that intimacy to walk with us and talk with us and tell us that we are his own. Yes. David was writing about that very experience in Psalm 23. It's God's good intention for us to know him and his deep love and care for us. And it's his good intention for us to experience it every day in the green pastures, in the still waters, in the valley of the shadow of death, in a dinner party in front of our enemies. That his rod and his staff will continually comfort us, and that he will send goodness and mercy to follow us. I love Psalm 139. There's only one psalm I'm talking about today, but I love Psalm 139, verse 4. Especially in the Passion Translation, it says that God goes before us to make a way, but in his kindness he follows us to keep us from the harm of our past.
Yes, thank you.
Looking back at the landscape of our lives, I wonder, we often ask, where were you, God? What was that all about? I felt so alone. I wonder if the better question is, how were you? And I missed it. Apostle Paul said that we see through a glass dimly. We're in a fog. We grope in the darkness. My goodness, Jesus' mother didn't recognize him in the resurrection.
Yeah, well.
The two friends that were walking on the road to Emmaus missed him.
Yeah.
Even the disciples in the boat after the resurrection couldn't figure out who this guy was cooking a meal at the beach right away. Give yourself some grace. We're not going to always see him, but he's there.
Yes.
Psalm 139, where am I going to go to escape you? If I go to the highest heavens, you're going to be there. If you're in the lowest parts of hell, you're going to be. I am never going to be able to escape you. Who and what could ever separate us from the love of God? But how is he with us? How is he with us today? Where two or three are gathered in your name. He's going to be. This whole thing about the presence is so important. That distinguished the nation of Israel from all the nations around was the presence of God.
Yeah.
In a column of fire during the night and a column of smoke during the day. The tabernacle in the middle of them, the presence of God. I don't have it all figured out. I mean, I miss him a lot. I blow past him a lot. Somehow I don't see how he's with me. But yet, I believe we're invited to cultivate that awareness. How do we experience his presence? How do we experience his correction? How do we experience his rod that protects us? I said, grew up in the East Coast. We've lived here in Des Moines now for 25 years. I love it. I love Iowa. One of the first things I remember being introduced to in the spring was the mad hunt for this elusive, delectable little mushroom called the morels in the woods and forests. And I know I attempted a few times and nothing, and I picked up the wrong type of mushroom and I didn't eat it. And I mean, but my understanding is the forest and the woods are full of them. They're everywhere. You know how really good hunters cultivate an awareness of the morel mushrooms? You know, they're brown, they have that brainy contour look, and they blend right in to the browns and the leaves and the woods. They take with them a walking stick that has the image of a morel mushroom carved at the top. And as they walk along, they place that image on the landscape of the forest or the woods and are easily able to identify. What image do you carry to help you notice Jesus in your life? David, a shepherd, carried what he knew well, and that was the image of a shepherd. The care and the love and the characteristic of a shepherd. He wants to be known by us. He wants to be experienced by us. He wants us to know deeply how he is with us in the valley of the shadow of death, in the green pastures, still waters, in front of our enemies,
yes,
and our friends. Would you pray with me? Father God, We are so grateful that we are not left to roam this planet alone, to navigate the valleys and the mountains and the hardships and the pain and the good times without the author of life. Thank you for Jesus, the perfect image of God. Thank you for being with us today. In Christ's holy name, amen.